On WYPR, welcome back to Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Larry Hogan has been governor of Maryland a week shy of 100 days. The Maryland-Delaware-DC Press Association, which comprises 113 news outlets in the region, invited the governor to reflect on how it's gone so far. The Press Association asked me to moderate a discussion with the governor, lieutenant governor, and two cabinet secretaries. We spoke for more than an hour yesterday in Annapolis, in front of a live audience of reporters and advocates. This morning, we've condensed that conversation and organized it by topic. Earlier in this hour, we heard the governor's view of the budget stalemate and the aftermath of the death of Freddie Gray. Now we pick our conversation back up with the opioid epidemic ravaging parts of the state. Lieutenant Governor Rutherford chairs the emergency task force charged with looking at the overdose problem. I asked him when he expects to have recommendations.
We will have initial recommendations and a report this summer, August. And the final recommendations go into the governor December 1st.
Can you give us a headline? Is something emerging that seems an obvious step to take?
Well, there are a number of consistent themes that come across. First of all, there are a lot of families and individuals who are struggling with this ailment. One of the things that we have found out through some of the federal authorities is 75 to 80% of the new heroin users are coming off of prescription medications. So that has a lot to do with the surge. So there's some steps that possibly can be taken to better inform doctors, dentists, pharmacists in terms of the impact of these prescription medications, as well as the public in terms of how they will utilize these medications. There is a need for treatment facilities. There's questions in terms of how to approach that, and that's what we're exploring now. There's a law enforcement component to this, but as all of the law enforcement officials, both actually on the street police officers and sheriffs, but the state's attorneys will tell you, we're not going to arrest our way out of this, and it's not helpful to go after the users, those who are addicted, and even the small-time dealer that essentially is dealing to supplement their addiction. There's a question in terms of interdiction, which is much more of a federal issue, but we're coordinating with federal officials. So it's a multifaceted approach and challenge. Prevention is the key, though. We need to increase the education aspect. In high school health classes, they get information about drug abuse, but we need to start earlier, probably as early as late elementary school on to middle school. So there's a number of issues, and we're trying to take a holistic approach to addressing the challenge.
And let me just jump in there and say that I couldn't be more proud of the effort that the Lieutenant Governor is leading on this and how important this problem is. As we were traveling around the state last year, everywhere we went, It's not a big city problem. It's not just a suburban problem. Smallest towns in our state. We went out and we said, what's the number one problem facing your community? Almost across the board, every single answer everywhere was, heroin is the number one problem facing our community. I mean, we knew it was an issue, but there weren't a lot of people talking about it publicly. This is more people died from heroin overdose deaths last year than homicides or vehicular accidents or any other cause. And we had a 100% increase in heroin overdose deaths. It's a crisis, it's an emergency facing our state, it's tearing apart families and communities, and there's no magic solution. It's not an easy problem to fix, which is why most politicians don't ever talk about it. But we thought it was important to shine a light on this problem and to try to bring all the stakeholders and all the best ideas and information we could together. Lieutenant Governor's having these regional summits all over the state, and some of the testimony will just bring tears to your eyes about how this has ravaged people, and the stories of will just make you cry. You can't just say, okay, we're going to do this and it's going to fix the problem. It's going to be a multifaceted approach across every agency of state government, and our only promise is we're going to focus on it like a laser beam and try to come up with every solution that makes sense. Attack this problem.
We turn now to public transportation. Washington Post reporter Ovita Wiggins asked how much the expected cost of the Purple Line, the proposed light rail line between Bethesda and New Carrollton, would have to be reduced for the governor to support it.
It's not whether this is a worthwhile idea, does it make any sense, it's a question of whether the state can afford to do it at this point in time. So we have two transit projects, so one in Washington and one in Baltimore, that total about $5 billion. So it's a major investment of money. It's more than we spend on all of our roads in the state. And we're going to take a look at how can we, if we can move forward at all, and if we can, it would have to be under greatly reduced numbers, and we'd have to find a more cost-effective way to do it.
Another Post reporter pressed Governor Hogan on exactly how much the cost of the Purple Line would need to be reduced.
Much.
Mucho
reductions. I don't have a particular number, but it's completely out of whack. This Purple Line, as an example, has more than doubled. We haven't put a shovel in the ground just since the planning started. The costs have more than doubled. It currently, we're arguing here earlier about $68 million or $100 million. This transit project, which is has some legitimate positive arguments from Prince George's and Montgomery County's, cost $150 million per mile. And so you have to put that into consideration of all the other things that we're talking about.
From public transportation, we move on to public roads. The governor campaigned on promises to invest more resources in the state's roads and bridges. He gave his assessment of how his predecessors had handled road infrastructure.
The state had taken $1 billion out of the transportation trust fund, monies that were raised through the gas tax that were required to spend on transportation that were not spent on transportation. They were totally misappropriated into other things that had nothing to do with transportation. There was legislation on the, there was a referendum on the ballot this time to say, we're gonna force the state to make sure that they can't rob the trust fund for transportation anymore. It was a major issue in the campaign. I hammered this for years. I was the chief critic against the O'Malley administration's policies with respect to the Transportation Trust Fund. We have committed to fully restoring the Transportation Trust Fund. We've committed to trying to restore highway user revenues, which is the local government's primary source of revenue from the state for 40 years, was cut by 96%. We just started to pay them back with this legislative session. We're going to continue to do so until they get whole and get back to where they used to be. With respect to transit, we're looking at all these transportation priorities. We're making decisions about transit projects, potentially for Baltimore and Washington. Our priority is building and fixing and maintaining roads and bridges.
The wide-ranging conversation also touched on the question of whether public school students have to take too many tests. Betty Weller of the Maryland State Education Association, the teachers' union, urged him to sign the bill on his desk that would create a commission charged with identifying ways to reduce over-testing.
The answer is yes, I agree with you completely. I've stated my opinion on this numerous times. I think students are over-tested. I think we're spending far too much time preparing them for the test and not actually teaching them, and I'd love to sit down with your organization and get your input. We are going to sign the bill. I was at the White House a month or so ago with the president discussing this very issue. He feels the same way. It's not a partisan issue. It's something we've got to address. Kids are being over-tested.
Reporter Brian Sears of the Daily Record picked up on the frustration Governor Hogan had voiced about dealing with Democratic leaders on the budget.
I wanted to follow up a little bit on your wrap-up comments about bipartisanship and relationships with the legislature. It's been well reported that your relationship with the Senate president dates back a long period of time. And many of the challenges that your administration faced towards the end really dealt with the challenges in building a relationship with House Speaker Mike Bush.
Right.
And I was wondering what you'll be doing in the interim to try and build that relationship so that maybe you can overcome some of those communication challenges in the future.
Well, thanks. That's a great question. I wish I had the magic wand to wave to make my relationship perfect with the Speaker of the House. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think most people are aware. I've known Miller described it as he's known me since I was a baby. I don't think that's quite true, but I've probably known him since I was 6 years old. So I got a long relationship. We understand each other. We don't agree, but we communicate very well. He tells me exactly what he thinks.
There's and some snickering.
I tell him exactly what I think. With Speaker Bush, we reached out to him on a weekly basis, and we talked to his staff on an almost daily basis. I had him over to the governor's mansion for lunch, for breakfast. We constantly tried to reach out. We're going to continue to do so. I was a little frustrated by a couple of things that happened in this session. One was that we had a piece of legislation that would give tax credits for people who make voluntary donations to the public schools and or to the private schools. 80% of the people in Maryland are in favor of that legislation. It's passed the Senate numerous times. It's has enough sponsors in the House to pass, and Mike Bush refused to allow them to vote on it. So that was a concern of mine. There were some issues that caused a little bit of friction, but we're going to continue to do everything we can. The Speaker of the House is somebody I admire. He's a smart guy. I respect the fact that he has the right to his own opinions, and we're going to try to do everything we can to improve the relationship over the next several years.
Chief Legislative Officer Joe Getty, a former legislator, picked up the analysis.
The easy storyline in Annapolis is a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature, and that's covered a lot. This is my second tour of duty in the executive branch. I've enjoyed it both times, and I've been able to see that a lot of Annapolis is a different story. It's not the easy storyline, but it's the storyline between the two presiding officers. Sometimes the governor is an accidental tourist to what's going on in Annapolis.
Sometimes I'm a referee in between the two.
Sometimes you're a referee. Sometimes it's a role of negotiator or mediator. And sometimes what's really going on in Annapolis, sometimes it's in the back room. Sometimes you can tell from the comments from the rostrum of either chamber that what's really going on with a certain piece of legislation or a certain activity in Annapolis, it's not the role of the governor that's influencing that. It's the relationship between the speaker and the Senate president.
Yeah, I would venture to say that my relationship with Speaker Bush and with Mike Miller is better than either of their relationships with each other. And I remember one breakfast I sat in between the two of them, and I thought there was going to be blows exchanged. I had to kind of keep them at bay. But we're going to try to work with everybody, not only in a bipartisan fashion, but in a bicameral fashion, get the House and the Senate to cooperate and communicate with one another also.
That was Governor Larry Hogan speaking yesterday at an interview sponsored by the Maryland-Delaware D.C. Press Association. At our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, we have links to audio of the entire conversation as well as video of some highlights. And just a reminder, if you want to listen on demand or stream our show or any others from your smartphone or tablet, we have an app for that. Just search for WYPR on your phone's app store. On WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead on Maryland Morning, a blast of Balkan brass. Stay with us on 88.1.